bury the lead at the top. There's a black Adam Schefter out there?
Probably on Twitter. Yeah.
I'm wondering what the avatar looks like for that one, huh?
I bet you have an idea.
Probably.
I heard there's a pink Steve DiOsi out there. Oh, I'm sorry.
He's here with us today.
Hello, Steve. Sorry.
Pink Steve DiOsi is in the house with us today. Hour number two, Daily
You know someone's
Keith.
Putting that on Twitter right
oh,
now.
Yeah.
As we speak. That's great.
It is a False Count Anywhere Friday, which means we've kind of been all over the place, and that's what we like to do on Fridays. I should also tell you that even though it's been a shortened week for both Rich and myself, we still have enough to put together a week in review.
Well, the week still went on. There were shows. Who filled in for us on Monday? Ninkovich, Bradford?
Volani.
Oh.
Who we sometimes heard.
I heard. An issue about the whole Ninkovich.
We may hear back from that.
He speaks highly of you guys.
Yeah, he really does.
He doesn't know which one of us is which, apparently. But
not even a little bit of an idea.
Minor details.
So that means Monday, when we're at Gillette for Patriots Monday. This coming Monday.
We can quiz him.
When I once again will sit right next to Rob Ninkovich.
For like the 20th time,
he won't know who I am.
No.
Just introduce yourself as Rich.
Yeah.
It's like John Farrell didn't know who you were, right?
He did not. After one season, one full season.
Maybe sort of did.
I don't know if he did. We can't confirm that.
When
he
called you Ryan?
Yeah.
He had a lot on his mind.
He did.
He had a lot on his mind.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
So a False Count Anywhere Friday means that we've talked some hockey, some basketball, obviously some football. We did mention at the top of the program that this is the 19th anniversary. 19 years ago today, Bill Belichick was named HC of the NYJ. Now, that didn't last very long.
It did not.
But 19 years ago today, and think about how history of these two organizations would be totally, completely changed if he had stayed.
Yeah. There's a lot of ways that could go, both good or bad. You know, the Jets certainly would have been in a better position, I think, but... Who knows if he would have lasted 18 years? Who knows if he would have lasted 5 years?
Yeah, what could he have gotten
out of
Chad
Pennington?
He didn't last a month,
so.
What would Chad Pennington have been under Brady? Or under Belichick?
Maybe Chad Pennington was a guy that was willing to do the extra work but didn't have a coach that was putting it on
Maybe
him.
He would have won 5 Super Bowls.
And let's not get carried away. All right.
Maybe he would have won one.
I have not yet gotten Steve's opinion, and we'll get right back to the calls, but the 15 finalists are out for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Two former Patriots have made the 15 finalists, Richard Seymour and Ty Law.
Yep.
I think both are going to have a hard time getting in again.
Oh, how dare you, Bill.
No, I
Come
agree.
On. I think there are three locks, okay? There are three guys who I think are locks. Tony Gonzalez, 14-time Pro Bowler. He's a lock. That's done. Ed Reed, 9-time Pro Bowler. I think there's a pretty good chance that he's a lock.
Agreed.
Champ Bailey, 12-time Pro Bowler. I think there's a pretty good chance he's a lock.
Right, even though the Pro Bowl has become less of an indicator.
I know, but
lately,
they were also
still,
all pros yes, and all absolutely. Decade teams and all that stuff.
When I say less of an indicator, when you talk about 4 or 5, okay, fine. When you talk about 12, 13, 14. That's a strong indicator. I agree, and I think Ty Law again. Both Ty Law is I think closer. Than before. This is the second time in the top 15, is it?
It is. It's the first time that Seymour's been a finalist.
Right.
Right. Ty Law back to back. I think he was a finalist last year.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, again, he was part of a great defense that was very responsible for the championships here. And it was one of those scenarios you look at, okay, well, he's up there in interceptions too, in terms of career interceptions. It's funny how it creeped up on you, but he did end up playing, 14 years? 13, 14 years?
Yeah, he's 24th all-time in picks.
Yeah. I mean, that's not bad. That's not bad.
And then you throw in the playoff stuff, too.
Yes. Like
that, to me, that Huge. Should seal his candidacy. That he should be in. And full disclosure, he's my favorite Patriot player of all time, so I'm, of course, going to say he should be in there, but... He has more interceptions of Peyton Manning than anybody else.
That alone should put him in
the Hall of Fame. That AFC Championship, like after the AFC Championship game, they should have drove him to Canton. And be like, that's it. That's all we need to see. Let alone the pick six against Kurt Warner and the Super Bowl. Like he had so many big moments for them. Plus, he was for that generation of players, that decade plus, if you want to go like mid to late 90s to even through the 2000s. How many cornerbacks were better than him? And maybe one of the guys might be on this ballot. Maybe you'd say Champ Bailey. Charles Woodson, right? Those guys. But that might be it. That might be it. He's second team all decade for the 2000s. The two corners that are first team are Champ Bailey and Charles Woodson.
Yep.
Second team is Ty Law and Rondae Barber. But Ty Law, you know, to me, he is absolutely in. I mean, the defenses were so important, those early Super Bowl runs. And then not only that,
I might suggest, though, that Seymour is a better candidate.
Because he was first team all decade.
Yeah, he was first team all decade, a 7-time Pro Bowler as opposed to a 5-time. Yep. And I understand that's not the be all and end
all. No, but it's.
He also plays a position that unfortunately doesn't get its due. Right. I mean, no, it's going to figure against him.
I think they're both Hall of Famers. I do think that, it is a little bit easier to look at quarterbacks, wide receivers, running backs, corners, and sort of be able to really know whether they should be in. Offensive and defensive linemen, at least for me, it's almost more what other people say about them. It's like what other former players say about them, current players say about them. I wouldn't really know. But all I know is he was dominant, and there wasn't many guys better at his position than he was his whole time playing.
Agreed. But, you know, you're looking at it in terms, too. And I agree with his candidacy, and I think he might be one of those guys that gets there later in the process. He might it might be 8 or 10 years down the road, or maybe not that much. Sometimes you fall off the grid
because there's not like stats to really back him up,
right.
Like, well, that position
the problem with cornerback is that when you're that good, they avoid you.
I was gonna say Ty Law led the league in interceptions twice, including the year with the Jets right after he left New England.
Yep.
But there's also a lot of years where he might only have 2 interceptions because they're throwing to the other side. Like Otis Smith is on the other side, so they're going to throw that way every single time.
Yeah, absolutely right. And that's one of those scenarios that you look at. And you know, the same thing with guys who come off the edge and sack quarterbacks. If you're that good, you're going to get double-teamed a lot. Mm-hmm. And to see guys that consistently get double-digit sacks, 12, 14, 16 sacks every single year, that makes it even more interesting. We've seen a number of guys have 12, 13 sacks, and then all of a sudden you don't see them for another year or two. But the guys that consistently get those double-digit sacks are interesting, depending on the defense they play. Sometimes you're in a defense where they don't care if you stop the run and you just rush the quarterback. That's fine. But you're right. It's difficult to quantify that with straight stats like interceptions or sacks, especially with Seymour's position.
I'll give you another guy who I think might be a lock, and it's a position, well, you would be more apt to study it than I would. Offensive line, Alan Faneca, his team had 11 top 10 rankings in run offense during the 13 seasons that he played.
Mm-hmm.
He was a 9-time Pro Bowler, all-decade team in the 2000s. I mean, you look at the numbers that you can measure offensive linemen by, and you think,
yeah, he's up there.
How's he not in?
That's also the eye test, too, with offensive linemen. Offensive linemen, especially left tackles, maybe a little bit different because it's more an isolated battle. But interior offensive linemen, now all of a sudden, you got to look hard and you got to pay close attention to how they play every single week, every single play. And I think Faneca is one of those guys that absolutely merits the Hall of Fame just by watching. I have no idea of his numbers. I have no idea, but if you look at the way he played and the job he did against some very good players.
Like Kevin Mawai was a 6-time first team All Pro.
Yep,
right, best center of that generation.
I mean, if you look at the class that Seymour and Law are up against, you think it's going to be hard.
It is.
Because they don't have any numbers that just blow you away, where you just say, like the Champ Bailey numbers. You say, well, please, it's not even a question.
Right.
And I love Ty Law, and I love Richard Seymour. But, you know, in this class, it's going to be hard for those guys.
Yeah, the good news for Seymour is there's not another defensive lineman on the ballot, or at least on the top, you know, the final 15. So with Ty Law, unfortunately, as much as I love him, you could make the case, you know what, he's not even the best corner on this group.
He's not.
Right? And so then that might be tough. Now, it doesn't mean they both can't get in. I mean, we've seen years, you know, Randy Moss and T.O. both got in. They're both wide receivers, and boom, they're both in. That's fine.
Both those guys were overwhelming, though.
Overwhelming. Tell the committee that, who kept T.O. out for a few years.
Yeah.
But either way, I felt the same way. I felt they were overwhelming.
T.O. was his own worst enemy, too.
In terms of
some of that, too. And,
yes.
And for better or worse, and I think it's for worse, I think that a lot of voters will let personality and personal relationships get in the way of making making what should be qualified votes.
None of these guys that we've just named have any of those issues.
Right. Absolutely right.
None
of them. I mean, John Lynch, Champ Bailey, Kevin Mawai. I mean, Alan Faneca.
You know what's funny, too, is just putting it in perspective. Obviously, you know, Tom Brady's age comes up all the time, but the fact that all these guys that are on the Hall of Fame ballot, Think about all the games that Tom Brady played against Ed Reed or Champ Bailey, yeah, or even on the other side, Edgerrin James, Isaac Bruce, going back to the first Super Bowl, Tony Gonzalez. Those guys, not only the teammates, Tylon, Richard Seymour, but so many guys that he went up against are now have been out of the league long enough to get into the Hall of Fame.
5 years is the waiting time for the NFL Hall of Fame. Yeah, you're right.
And he's played against like all these guys. There's so many Hall of Famers that he's played against. It's funny.
As opposed to the amount of Hall of Famers he's played with.
Right, and that gets into the other question. So Ty Law and Richard Seymour, I mean, to me, are Hall of Famers, but it probably won't be this year.
It probably won't.
And you look at the 18 years that Belichick and Brady, who are obviously Hall of Famers, who they've played together, or they've been together, who else
is
there?
Moss is in already, but Moss was here for a limited amount of time.
And he played, a year and a half with Brady?
Yeah. And Seau's in, limited amount of time.
Seau's in for San Diego.
Right, I was going to say, Seau was not a Hall of Famer here. Right. Like, Randy Moss had a Hall of Fame season here, but they didn't even win the Super Bowl.
Right.
You know, and you're talking about all these other... Adam Vinatieri should be in.
He will.
Not even quite. If that's not first ballot, then blow up the Hall of Fame. Because
don't even vote anymore.
Right.
He is absolutely. Now, he's also played more years in Indy than he did here.
Yeah. Agreed.
And then it goes back to the...
But he also has... I'm sorry to interrupt. He's also not one of these guys that kicked in the dome his entire career. And he has one or two of the greatest kicks of all time in ridiculous weather.
The single best kick I've ever seen. And the snowball kick was the greatest kick I've ever seen.
And the clutch kicks in the Super Bowls. I mean, you're talking about a guy who absolutely, without a doubt, should be a Hall of Fame.
So you're talking about a coach, a quarterback, and a kicker.
Yeah.
that's what your dynasty is. Now, a lot of other great players. Rob Gronkowski, we've had this debate before, yep. Steve. If this is his last year, and Dale and I both think this is his last year, is he getting in?
I'm not. He has a chance. I don't think he would in a first ballot. You know, I just don't think he would in a first ballot Hall of Fame. I don't think he would. I think
he was certainly on the path where it was going to be simple.
No doubt.
Then he sort of hit that wall.
But as I've maintained from the get go, the single most talented tight end I've ever seen play the game, not without
more
a question.
More than Bavaro.
Yes. Simply because. Taller, more range of what do they call it? Catch radius, and you know, Mark had to struggle to keep himself up to 245 pounds. Gronk is 270, and Mark, you know, toughness. Two of the tougher tight ends I've ever seen play. Mark might be the toughest tight end I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I've ever played with or against, but
tougher than Pete Metzelaars.
A little bit.
Okay.
Just a little bit.
All right.
Just a little bit.
Fine. That's fine.
But again. But he is, I think Gronk is probably one of those guys that with another year of another 80, you know, 90 reception year or something, he could be in the Hall of Fame.
So the other guy that I would say is going to get in, and you have to give him credit for it, would be Darrell Revis. But that was only 1 year here, but it was a Super Bowl year, right? So it was a significant year.
He probably will get in.
I think he will.
His time in New York will help him.
Because these guys that we're talking about, Champ Bailey, Charles Woodson, Ty Law, the next generation of corners, I think Revis is the best of that bunch.
Yeah.
So I think when their time is up, I think he'll get in. But that was also, so that was 1 year. So you're talking about guys that have had multiple seasons with Brady and Belichick. It's probably just Adam Vinatieri. I think Gronk is in. So you're talking about a quarterback with a kicker and a tight end? And that has led to five Super Bowls?
That's insane. Eight Super Bowl appearances.
And by comparison, we did some legwork here.
Whoa.
So Joe Montana, this is actually pretty staggering. Joe Montana played with one offensive Hall of Famer. Obviously, he's one of the greatest players of all time, and Jerry Rice. We played with Jerry Rice. Now, defensively, they had Ronnie Lott. They had Charles Haley. They had... Actually, Richard Dent and Deion Sanders, that we put them on the list, but that was Steve Young's team in 94.
Yeah.
So that 49ers team had less Hall of Famers than I thought they probably would have had. Now, Dallas, we're going to talk with Hall of Famer Michael Irvin in a little bit. They, of course, had the three-headed monster, all Hall of Famers.
Yes.
Aikman, Smith,
Irvin. And you can throw an offensive lineman or two in there.
Larry Allen. So you had four out of the 11 starters, you had four Hall of Famers on that list. And then, of course, on the other side.
Three skill position Hall of Famers.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And then Charles Haley. And they even had Deion Sanders in there, too. So they had a couple Hall of Famers. Going all the way back to the Steelers, these guys are all Hall of Famers. Mel Blount, Terry Bradshaw, Joe Green, Jack Hamm, Franco Harris, Jack Lambert, Lynn Swann, Mike Webster.
Yep.
And then you compare that to Tom Brady, who played with Adam Vinatieri.
Right. Well,
the, hell of a kicker, though.
Sure.
I mean, again, I would have Ty Law in. I would have Richard Seymour in. I would actually consider William McGinnis, but that, I'm also a Patriots super fan, so it's a little bit different. As far as the committee and how they're going to vote these guys in, he may just have a kicker and a tight end, and then, like you said, a, sort of a one-off wide receiver in Randy Moss, a end-of-his-career linebacker in Junior Seau, and a one-year Darrell Revis.
The Steelers scenario is a little different because there was absolutely no free agency whatsoever. They couldn't go anywhere, even if they wanted to. They could quit football for a year, come back, and still have to play for the Steelers. So you could see how and why they would want to. Would they win 4 Super Bowls in 6 years? You could see how and why with that roster of guys, and that you're not even talking about LC Greenwood and some of the other defensive backs and defensive players they had. You had some tremendous defensive players in that group. So that right there was, you see. Part of that is that there's absolutely no free agency. The other, well,
yeah, right.
But again, San Francisco and Joe Montana's years, for the most
that's
part.
That's actually really surprising to me. Now, they went back-to-back Hall of Fame quarterbacks, which is insane. True. So now, like, Joe Montana got to play with them, but or at least on the field at the same time. But to have just one offensive player, like, you think back, because as years go on, I feel like John Taylor and Roger Craig and Tom Rathman and Brent Jones get better and better and better. But in reality, they were good, but they weren't Hall of Famers.
Fullbacks rarely make it in. Old school fullbacks, maybe back in the 40s or 50s, might make it in. But nowadays, even in the 80s, fullbacks weren't. Yeah. Even though he was a tremendous fullback and a good receiver too, you're not going to make the cut there.
And to the texter who suggests that Vince Wilfork will be a Hall of Famer, he unfortunately plays a position that they will never put in the Hall of Fame.
No, he might.
They have one nose tackle in the Hall of Fame right now.
But Vince was...
He was really good.
Do you think he deserves to be considered?
He'll get consideration.
But, you think he gets as far
he
as...
He plays a position that they just don't put in.
Do you think he gets as far as Law and Seymour, Final 15?
I don't.
He might in 1 year.
And you know what the issue is?
Might.
There are no numbers.
Yep.
You have no idea.
You can't look at any number and say, well, other than Pro Bowls or all
pros.
See,
that's where...
That's all you got.
That's where you need more former players on the committee. Like, it can't just be writers who just... They champion a certain guy and they try to get everybody to vote for him. But if you had other Hall of Famers and other guys...
The Hall of Famers do have a vote. The Hall of Famers... I'm pretty sure the guys in the Hall of Fame have a vote right now.
How they do?
I think they do. I think I don't know. I could be wrong.
They should, but they're not the only vote.
They have threatened to not go in if certain or to, right. to not be around if certain people went in. But
true. And the other guy I would say should be a Hall of Famer, but apparently won't be because he's been eligible for a while, is Rodney Harrison. I would rather have Rodney Harrison than John Lynch, and John Lynch keeps being named a finalist.
Yeah, and you know, part of Rodney's issue too was that he wasn't as well liked except by his teammates.
He was not well liked at all. Yeah,
at all. Nobody liked him, but except guys who played with him.
Guys who played with him will talk about Rodney in terms of a Hall of Fame candidate.
He ended up being a captain here within like months of his arrival.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys will tell you that when he arrived, they hated him.
Yeah. But because
without knowing him, without playing with him, and then all of a sudden it was, whoa, wait a minute.
You saw him taking shots at your receivers. That's why. You saw him flying around and hitting, and when most of it was legal. Most of the hitting that people hated him for was legal. He's not like he was getting called for 3-4 penalties a game. He was doing legal hits. He just did it better than most people.
We return to a Falls Count Anywhere Friday with Dale and Keith right now on WEEI.
You got black coaches falling away by the wayside. I don't know how many other people going to say. You got some people say, I thought we were beyond that. And I just want to say a few words to white America. I'm getting sick and tired of that nonsense. It's easy for you. I thought we were past it. Well, when were you a part of it? When did you have to worry about fairness? When did you have to worry about being prejudiced against? When did you have to worry about being pigeonholed and minimized? For folks out there in white America, for folks out there hosting their own radio show, television show, or beyond, so quick to point out, I thought we were beyond this. Could you do me a favor, please, and be quiet? Could you do me that favor? Mike McCarthy has barely had a chance to pass gas, and he's already being interviewed for nothing. You couldn't win the last 8 years with Aaron freaking Rodgers as your quarterback. And everybody in New York talking about how he could be the guy to uplift Sam Darnold. Well, you could win with Aaron Rodgers.
Stephen A. Smith needs to shut up. Shut up, you.
So he's telling talk radio hosts to shut up? That doesn't make any sense.
I mean, think about that. Think about that
for
a minute.
That's the job, Stephen.
So you can't even discuss it.
Don't talk about it.
If you're not black, you can't even discuss it. So Stephen A., You've never played in the NFL. That's You've true. Never coached in the NFL.
He has not.
So you're not allowed to talk about it either, right?
No, folks out there hosting their own radio show, television show, beyond, so quick to point out, I thought we were beyond this.
So full disclosure, I am a white. And I saw,
what?
I am, I know it's radio, so people don't know, but I am.
Full disclosure, Steve's a pink.
And so, Steve is. Diaz.
And there was an extreme prejudice against short, fat, slow pink linebackers.
Oh, man.
Yeah. There was. It was bad.
Yeah, it was bad.
I feel like we've overcome.
I broke the barrier. I'm not making light of
no,
anything.
I know,
I'm just
I know,
saying,
I
get it. I understand the anger, but you can't tell people to not talk about it.
You
that
can't.
Makes no sense.
And this drives me nuts. So what's his point that the five black coaches who were fired, of the eight NFL coaches who were fired this week or last week, they all deserve to keep their job? Or were they fired because they're black?
And
because then you'd have a real issue.
Don't bring
issue.
Facts into the equation.
Okay.
And to his point about Mike McCarthy's getting a second chance, you mean like Tony Dungy did, like Dennis Green did?
Yep.
We can go through some names.
Hugh Jackson won one game in 2 years, and he might be the head coach in Cincinnati. Explain that.
Marvin Lewis.
Team went on a winning streak as soon as he was fired. Hugh Jackson might get another job in the NFL.
Marvin Lewis got
100 years.
About four or five chances.
Lifetime contract. Give me a break. Those guys deserve to lose their
see,
job.
See, I don't mind his opinion. I like his hot sports take.
Great.
Just don't tell everybody else.
You're not
allowed to talk about it.
Right.
Only I can talk about
it.
Because
I'm
a black
on the other
man,
extreme,
I guess.
Don't you say that we have to have a dialogue? Isn't that the idea? Well, that's what I guarantee you he said that before. You have to have a dialogue about this. Now he's telling you to shut up.
But it doesn't make any sense because they're not getting into each individual case and saying whether or not they should have kept their job. And if they do that, I think all five should have been gone. The only one that you could even make an argument for is Steve Wilks because it was 1 year. But
true.
Which I also think was wrong.
But
he shouldn't have been fired.
But he's a defensive coach. They have a rookie quarterback. Maybe they think they can get something better out of him. You know, we had those metrics that we pulled up yesterday. Dale, you found that website that ranked all the quarterbacks.
Right.
He was dead last. So maybe it is time for them to move on, even though it was just 1 year. But that's not a great argument that we can't talk about it. Just because we don't know what it's like to be black in America, I guess. Like,
we're
talking about NFL head coaches right now.
But don't we have to talk about it to get the information that we need to understand the situation?
You need to shut your mouth.
I mean,
that's what you
got to
do.
Is there any issue in this country that's divisive like this that you don't want to talk about?
Isn't it sort of the idea?
Right.
So, okay. So is he? If we ask Stephen A., like Todd Bowles, should he have kept his job? If yes, why? Vance Joseph, should he have kept his job? If yes,
again,
why?
You're talking about facts.
Sorry.
You don't want to have to bring facts into the equation when you're making a semi-hot take.
And Mike McCarthy, I don't like Mike McCarthy. I wouldn't want him to be the next head coach of the Patriots. I don't. But he's also a Super Bowl winning head coach, right?
Yes.
So maybe a Super Bowl winning head coach is probably going to get another crack at it. That's my guess.
I hate doing this on the air, but they can't hear me on the intercom on the other side of the
ground. Rossi!
So, Rossi,
we're in here.
Rossi, help me out here.
Hello.
I just want to hear the beginning of what Stephen A. said here. We're not going to listen to the whole rant.
Good.
But play it from the beginning so that you understand exactly what he's saying here.
We got black coaches falling away by the wayside. I don't know how many other people going to say. You got some people say, I thought we were beyond that. And I just want to say a few words to white America. I'm getting sick and tired of that nonsense. It's easy for you. I thought we were past it. Well, when were you a part of it? When did you have to worry about fairness? When did you have to worry about being prejudiced against? When did you have to worry about being pigeonholed and minimized? For folks out there in white America, for folks out there hosting their own radio show, television show, beyond, so quick to point out, I thought we were beyond this. Could you do me a favor, please, and be quiet? Could
now
you do me that favor?
See, that's the point.
Mike McCarthy has barely had a chance.
Okay, all right,
this
all right.
This whole thing is stupid.
Hold on. But hold on. Let me play a little devil's advocate
please.
Here. Maybe he's saying that the people that are insisting that we've moved beyond this don't need to talk about it anymore. Maybe
like Mike Francesa, who said, hey, the fact that we had five black coaches we could have fired was a good thing.
Right.
I don't even think in terms of that anymore.
Yeah, but what's wrong with Francesa saying that? Like, I just think, is he suggesting they were fired because they're black? Because that's outrageous. But that's the only reason why it makes sense for what he's saying. Like, they weren't good.
Yeah, if he could make that case,
they weren't good head coaches.
Try to do.
Right. Well,
they
weren't
good. They were all bad.
Here's the thing that you see that everybody the people on air that are willing to point out what this situation is and want to chalk it up to racism, will stop short of calling the NFL full of 100% racist. They don't go that to that next step. If you're saying that, now all of a sudden say, well, then there's the NFL is racist. The ownership is racist. Management is racist. Everything about it is racist. You have to take that next step. If you're going to just sit there and lay out the facts as you believe them, or as you interpret them, excuse me, then you have to take the next logical step. You have to say that the NFL is racist.
If Stephen A. had taken it case by case and made a case why Marvin Lewis shouldn't have been fired, why Todd Bowles shouldn't have been fired, why Hugh Jackson shouldn't have been fired.
Certainly can't.
That one's a joke.
I mean, if he could somehow do that, I'd understand his argument more.
Right.
The only one, as you point out, the only one, and I made this argument
you
yesterday.
You like it more than I do.
Steve Wilkes shouldn't have been fired. I don't think any one and done, with the rare exception like Bobby Valentine.
Right.
The one and done is ridiculous.
Agreed.
To me.
Agreed. You see, so one out of five cases, he has a point. Oh, okay. Well, make a point. Well, then you have to make the same point that Mike McCarthy shouldn't have been fired in Green Bay because of his record.
But it's almost like it's being suggested that part of the reasons why they were fired is because of that doesn't make any sense to me, because that's not why. So they were hired in these places, and so that's a good thing, but then they're fired, and then now it's like, oh my God, you guys don't understand what it's like. Like, I don't connect the dots.
Well, that's the thing. You have to take the next step. If you're making these statements that lead you down the road, you have to make that leap to say the NFL is full of racist owners and general managers.
Right.
You have to say that.
And we got into this.
You can't just hint around the edges at it.
No, you can't tap dance around it. We were talking about the Rooney Rule. And I think the idea of it is good and it makes sense. You just hope that all these teams, though, are, when they take those interviews, are taking them seriously. Or they're not just simply checking off a box.
There's more than one black coach since the Rooney Rule came along that has said that they were brought in to do exactly that.
Right,
to
and
check a box.
That's not great. Not helping things out.
No.
But
even if you're just checking off a box, maybe you have the opportunity to go in and impress somebody. Maybe you have more of an opportunity than you had before. So even if you are a black coach going in to check the box for whomever, because what happens is there's some teams that have already made up their mind going into the process. There's some teams that know who they want as a coach.
Yeah, John Gruden last year.
But they have to check off the boxes.
No.
But
that's not great.
Maybe that situation is, okay, you get a little experience at interviewing with the owner and the general manager. Maybe you learn something from what teams want or whatever. And maybe that's an opportunity to take advantage of. Some black coaches were bothered by the idea that they were simply being used to check off a box.
By the way, the Miami Dolphins have announced a few minutes ago that they have completed their interview with Patriots coach Brian Flores for their head coaching vacancy. He's going to have four interviews this weekend, reportedly. Today.
And you hope that they're all actually interested in him.
Well, they seemed interested in him. Some teams did last year as well.
Arizona did, and now he's not on Arizona's list.
He's going to interview today. Well, he did interview already with the Dolphins.
Yes.
He'll also interview with the Packers today. Tomorrow he will reportedly interview with the Broncos and the Browns. Now, to the point, I guess Stephen A. would say, this is a good thing, right? Because Brian Flores is getting interviews.
Yeah, I get. No, well, but they have to, though, too. Like, to because of the Rooney Rule, like all these teams, and there's eight of them that are going to have to be doing interviews, so they can't just interview white guys based off of this rule. I think the other part of it, without hearing the entire segment of Stephen A. Smith, I think he's curious about second chances. And I think that's why he brought Mike McCarthy, and he was so fired up. Even though, are you really going to compare Mike McCarthy's track record to Todd Bowles's? Like, I hope not. Or Hugh Jackson.
Or Lewis.
Or, they're not the same. I mean, Lewis might be the closest one, although he's 0 for the playoffs. So, I don't know.
I thought he should have been fired years ago.
Years ago.
Remember, he kind of was last year?
And
remember,
then
he was out for a day,
and
then
he was gone, then he was back. It's like, it was like he decided not to fire himself.
Well, it was also, you're talking about one of the more ridiculous ownership and management scenarios in Cincinnati. It's been known for a long time.
They said, Peter King told us yesterday, they might hire Hugh Jackson and Vance Joseph.
Okay, good for them.
I know, that's what I said.
Best of luck to you.
Good for them.
Have at it. Yeah. Chris in Texas. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Hey, I just want to talk about the there was a point brought up that the NFL league is something like 90% African American, 10% something like that.
Yeah, it's in the 70s, 76, I think.
Yeah, thanks. So I played football at Norwich University, a D3 school. I went the ROTC route, but a buddy of mine went the coaching route. And right out of school, he had to work for Anna Maria as a position group coach for the AmCats. And then to make ends meet, he also had to be a baseball coach and then a lacrosse coach. After doing that for a couple years, he got an interview as like the academic coordinator at Rutgers, which equates to him running study hall at Rutgers for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then after doing that, he got assistant position group coach for the assistant O-line at Rutgers. And that was a great jump. And then after that year, the head coach got fired. And then he got demoted to like the recruiting coordinator, something like that. Did that for a couple years. And then finally he got his big break and he was the special teams coordinator for like a D2 team out of Wisconsin. And
I mean, what are we doing here? A friend's resume? What was that? Is updating his LinkedIn?
Yeah, you got
it. I was trying to give him a leash.
What happened there?
I was waiting to see what the next move was.
Yeah, where'd he go next?
Call back, Dale. We'll come back here and talk to you.
What else did he do?
I think the point he was trying to make was the long, arduous road that you have to. By the way, that's the same whether you're a black coach or a white coach. I mean, take a look at the road that Bill Belichick took.
Right.
You know, starting as basically a coffee boy with the Detroit Lions back in the day.
Right. He talks about Ted Marchabrota seeing him sleeping at the office and inviting him to sleep in one of his extra bedrooms at his house when in, 1976 or 77?
This sport is not like basketball and baseball where Jason Kidd can retire and then the next year he's the head coach.
Right.
Or some of these guys, or baseball, you see skippers all the time. Like they were just playing, or maybe like Alex Cora, you're a bench coach, and then boom, you're a manager. Like that doesn't happen. Even Mike Vrabel, former player, had a very quick going from player to head coach.
That was quick.
But even still, he was at Ohio State for 3 years.
Yep.
He was a linebackers coach and a defensive coordinator and then a head coach. So even he took, 7 years from when he retired to becoming a head coach, or 8 years?
The NFL has a program to bring players into the NFLPA has a program to bring players into the coaching ranks. The NFL does, too. Talk to me about the numbers and the percentage of black versus white guys that are doing that. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure they have numbers on it.
Take Dale and Keefe with you wherever you go. Download the radio.com app. Now back to Dale and Keefe on WEEI.
Come get on the train.
I'm not knocking anybody who's not black, who's not a minority, for not understanding it. I am saying something different. Be decent enough to understand that you don't understand. And shut the hell up. You don't understand. You don't get it.
Thank you, Stephen A.
Well, that I agree with him on. I don't get it. What he's saying. I don't know what he's talking about.
Well, first off, if you don't get it, how are you going to get it? Are you going to read about it in a book? Are you going to...
Until you get it, you won't get it.
Yeah, but... Right. But, but what's the best way to get it? Listen, all right? I've had two marriages. I understand that I didn't get a lot then. But but now, the wonderful woman I've been with for 12, 13 years now, when she explains something to me, I kind of get it. When we talk about things, I kind of get it. Mm. When you have a discussion, when you have even things that we disagree about, when you have a discussion,
that would ever happen.
Right? Not that.
Did,
no, because she's
hypothetical.
She's right, and I'm wrong, and that's the way it is. And I, which is actually kind of true, but I'm really not exaggerating. But
shut the hell up!
But how do you learn? How, without dialogue? How do you figure it out? That's just a stupid statement. It really is.
I don't get it at all.
Unless you're comfortable with the currency that you gain from the racism that you say is rampant in the NFL, unless that gives you something to talk about, and you're the only one who can talk about it because, you know, you understand. I get it. Talk about things. Figure it out. It's such a stupid statement. It makes no sense whatsoever.
Really by the way, of the 12 coaches, of the 12 teams in the playoffs right now, 5 are coached by former players, sort of.
I was going to say, this is stretching.
And it is stretching. Sean Payton was a member of the Chicago Bears squad of strike-breaking replacement players.
Oh, he's a scab?
In three games.
Out of here, scab.
He was 8 for 23 throwing the football, 34.8%, for 79 yards, 0 touchdowns, 1 interception, a passer rating of 27.3.
So that is really stretching.
His one interception, by the way, came against the Saints, and they went, that's the guy we want coaching our team someday. Exactly. He makes the list, but as we said,
it's all backup quarterback.
I mean, Doug Peterson is a former player.
Yep, quarterback too, right?
Yeah,
yep. backup quarterback.
Frank Reich.
I was gonna say, they're all backups.
Anthony Lynn. Another backup. Jason Garrett others.
Yeah.
Backups, so you're talking about three of those guys, backup quarterbacks, right? You're talking about Peterson was a quarterback, wasn't he?
Peterson was a quarterback.
Yeah,
I believe.
You've also got a former player who's a GM in Baltimore. Ozzie Newsome was a great player.
And you got a former player in John Lynch out in San Francisco.
Yep. Well, he's not in the playoffs, but of the 12 playoff teams, Ozzie Newsome's GM.
The CEO of Green Bay is a former player too, I think. Mark Murphy? I think he's a former player too. So, but it's in that situation, don't you have to do the opposite of what Stephen A. Smith is talking about? Don't you have to
talk?
You do. How else are you going to learn? How's he going to learn more? How are we going to learn more? How is the white community going to learn more?
But take it the whole way. But don't you also need to wait to see what the season starts with? Like, he may have a much better case on his hands if you go into the 2019 season and there are two black head coaches out of the 32 teams.
Then you've got something to bitch about.
Then maybe you have something to complain about. But right afterwards, and there's eight teams that need to find coaches right now. So he didn't go through team by team and defend all these guys and say, well, what? Joseph should be there. You're right, because he can't.
Right.
And so that's why it doesn't make any sense.
One quick Patriots note, courtesy of Doug Kide, my colleague at Nesson. Patriots cornerback Stephon Gilmore was named a first-team All-Pro.
Yeah, the all the metrics were there, like those dork websites that have all the stats.
I made the point that if I was going to name the MVP of the Patriots this year, for the first time in recent memory, it might not be Brady, and I said Gilmore might be the guy for me.
Yeah, yeah.
He had a great year, in fact.
And it's amazing because you'll have people dispute that watch the Patriots all the time. Because you see...
Well, you watch every play,
every
and he gives up a pass
play.
Or a touchdown to Bryce Butler, and you're like, how is this guy all pro? You're like, well, look at everybody else.
Meanwhile, you don't see...
Marcus Peters was getting torched all year
absolutely.
Long, and
but,
I thought he was great.
But he had a nice pick six in that one game,
so good for him. You remember the highlights, yeah.
Yep.
David's in Weymouth. Hey, David, how you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. Doing well. Michael A. Smith, unfortunately...
Or Stephen A. Smith.
Stephen A. Smith, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
My apologies.
That's fine.
I know which sports we're talking about, but unfortunately, this is a microcosm of a bigger picture that's going on in the country. And it's all about perception. And Steve, there's a great video out there called I'm Not Racist that you should really watch, and it gives a white and black perspective. It's an amazing video. But what Stephen A. Smith doesn't talk about is, at one point in time, black athletes fought for the right to be in these professional leagues. And they've grown in numbers. 79% players are of African-American. Why do teams have them on the team? Because they get the best players to win. Why do you get a coach? You get the best coaches to win. We're making racism here be the scapegoat or the excuse for what is trying to run a business and win. It's okay that 79% of the players are African-American because that's great. But it's all about winning, and owners are going to win. So it's about the process and the system. Throwing a racism label on this is just horrible.
I'll also say this. In Stephen A.'s defense, he has in the past said that Marvin Lewis should be fired. He has in the past said Hugh Jackson's not a good coach, should be fired.
Yeah,
so he has done this as well. For some reason, I don't even think it's the fact that five black head coaches were fired this week. And as we said, the one case that I would argue against is Steve Wilks, because I don't think one and done is fair. I think what he's complaining about is people like us or Mike Francesa saying, oh, come on, I thought we were past that now. You know, we don't consider whether they're black or white. We just consider whether or not they do a good job. Even he's not going to make a case that Marvin Lewis did a good job or Hugh Jackson did a good job or Todd Bowles did a good job.
But that's why it's confusing, and it seems like an argument that he's trying to speed up. Again, if you go into the year where 2 out of 32, then maybe you have more of a opportunity to lose your mind, say what's going on, and you know, is the Rooney Rule really working and all of that stuff. But right now in the immediate aftermath, after all five of those guys that lost their jobs were not very good, the records were terrible, whether it was a place where the expectation was high or even some of the places where it was low, they were even worse than that. And I thought they all should have been gone. And then to turn this into something other than it is, I think is ridiculous.
But again, you hit it on the head. You can't back up what he's saying with facts about the actual firings.
Each team, you can't.
And to Dale's point, maybe you should have held on to this until...
when all the positions are filled. Tomlin should have been fired, and it should have been. You could have been talking about then Stephen A. Smith really would have lost.
The greatest question of the last century was asked yesterday of Peter King.
Yeah, I remember that.
Simply, do you give Mike Tomlin credit for keeping the ship afloat despite the Le'Veon Bell, despite the Antonio Brown crap? Mm. Or do you say, maybe he's responsible for that atmosphere there?
Okay, does the fish rot from the head?
Yes.
Is that the scenario? Is he allowed that behavior? And it happens to almost every single coach. Great players get away with more. It's not a secret. It's not something
everywhere.
That people. It's understood. But sometimes when the inmates start running the asylum, things get a little crazy, and that's exactly what happened in Pittsburgh.
Peter's in JP. Hey, Peter, how you doing?
Hi. I think it's at least up for debate whether they're better with Kyrie or with not.
All right.
Kyrie.
So you make the case for me because I can't.
Yeah, I don't see it.
Okay. Kyrie is one of the most talented scorers I've ever seen. He looks like he should play.
You're not making a good case so far.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the case. Okay. When Kyrie takes 16 shots or less, the record is 15-4. If he takes 17 or more shots, the record is 6-11. I think he's a great point guard, like James Harden and stuff like that. But I think if we have a Chris Paul type of player, okay, our defense was much better in the playoffs last year than it is now.
Can I point out to you that we don't have a Chris Paul type of player?
Mm-hmm. I said if we had...
They got a better scorer, yeah.
No, I'm saying if we had a Chris Paul type of point guard who can play defense and... He's a pass-first guy.
Peter, I got to be honest with you. You're not making the case at all.
You just compared him to last year's league MVP, so this isn't going very well.
Okay, are they better defensively without Kyrie?
Maybe slightly.
Much better. Okay.
No, it's one guy. No, not much better. No, it's not. Okay. I wouldn't say they're much better.
I just gave you a point. I don't know what this means exactly, but you tell me.
So in a league where every team is scoring 120 points, you're like, oh, we got to find the better defensive player because that's going to really sway a series.
All right. I'm just going to make my point. You said make my point.
Yeah, but you haven't gotten there. We asked you earlier, and you brought up three things that weren't. What is your – are you saving it for – what's your grand point? Let's hear it.
Okay. When Kyrie shoots 16 or less shots a game, they're 15-4. That means other people are getting more shots. When he shots 17 or more shots a game, the record is 6-11. So explain that to me. I don't know exactly what it means, but that's my point.
What the hell?
Hey, he got there.
He said, I don't know what it means,
play
but
Kyrie,
that's my point.
But have him shoot less.
But he actually, that was actually his first point.
Your point is? Yeah, he said, this is a quote from him, I don't know what it means, but it's my point.
Yeah.
How the hell are we supposed to know what
Keith,
it means?
Well said.
So that was a long way of saying they're better off with Kyrie. He's that guy. He's the Mike Greenberg.
As he was going along, I thought he was making the point that they're better off with Kyrie.
He's like, Kyrie's kind of like James Harden.
Well, unless
who is the MVP of the league and is the best scorer in the NBA right now.
Unless you could trade him for Chris Paul or James Harden.
And yeah, Chris Paul 5 years ago.
Go ahead.
So I'd rather have Kyrie Irving.
I don't know exactly what it means, but that's
good.
My point.
He thinks Kyrie shoots too much.
Yeah, well.
That's what he's saying.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We've got Week in Review coming up at the bottom of the hour. We've got Michael Irvin coming up an hour from now. Dale and Keefe with DRC Sports Radio, WEEI.